Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from secret sovereigns to surly strangers. And today we're talking about Suni.
Prepare yourselves.
I cast fireball. The Dungeon Cast.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. I'm ready to talk about Dungeons and Dragons.
Indeed. I am as well.
The fifth edition, William.
That's the only one we really... Well, that's not true. We talk about the
The other ones, but this is a fifth edition podcast. Welcome.
It definitely is.
Welcome to the Year of the Beholder, everyone.
Indeed.
Today is not a Beholder episode, but we will be building it at the back of the episode.
It's true.
We're building a Beholder, so stay tuned to the end
if
you want to check that out.
Very curious about what I-beam we're going to come up with today, but let's get into it. So we've talked about a lot of deities and demigods on the show. Gods of war, destruction, justice, dragons, and magic. But today we were taking a look at a deity with a much less talked about domain and sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. Today we were covering Suni, goddess of love.
Ooh, the goddess of love. Is this our Valentine's Day episode?
This is our Valentine's Day episode,
hey,
yes.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day, whether you got or not.
It's not actually on Valentine's Day. I think this comes out on the 2nd of February, but close enough.
This is the close enough to Valentine's Day episode.
Indeed.
Welcome.
Indeed it is.
Welcome.
Also known as Lady Firehair, the Lady of Love, the Princess of Passion, Suni is also the goddess of beauty, passions, and delights of the senses.
Ooh, okay.
Both benevolent and whimsical, Suni is a chaotic good deity and a greater deity at that. Make no mistake, though she may seem frivolous, soft, and superficial, she is a major power to be reckoned with and a true and valuable force for good in the world of D&D.
A great metaphor for love.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Debatably, she's actually more than a singular goddess. It is said that Hanalei Selenil, the elven goddess of love and beauty, may be but an aspect of Suni Firehair.
Ooh, okay.
But this is debatable.
Yeah, because the elves won't accept a non-elf looking.
Right. So more on that later, though. It's time to kick off this February with a perfect addition to your Valentine's Day-inspired one-shot game, so let's get into it.
All right.
Suni Firehair is said to be the fairest of all the powers in all the cosmos. When she is represented in art and song, she's depicted as the most beautiful woman in the realms, with sweeping radiant red hair and incredible charms. As for her actual appearance, Suni appears rarely to mortals. When she is seen, though, it is as a human female of unearthly beauty, clad only in a diaphanous silken gown and her impossibly long sweeping red hair, which often assumes the appearance of flames. While she always has red hair, her appearance changes as her whim dictates. Perhaps her appearance is always what the beholder deems to be the most beautiful display possible. Whether her skin is golden, mahogany, darkest amber, or ivory, and her eyes the color of honey, the sky, deep forest green, or chestnut, you will know that before you stand Suni, beauty incarnate.
Wow, a really pretty fire genasi.
Yeah.
Just coming the hair.
Yeah, the hair, yeah. Alternating between deep passions and shallow flirtations, Suni has been romantically linked with many of the Faerunian powers in the myths and of the realms. The Lady of Love enjoys attention and sincere flattery and avoids anyone who is horrific or boorish.
Okay. Because beauty is in the eye of the beholder, like you already said. Horrific?
I think horrific, it tends... Okay, so number one, D&D kind of has a problem where, like, ugly tends to get equated with evil.
Yes.
Which is no bueno. I'm not into that.
No, that's not very fair, is it?
Yeah, it's not very fair. But I think when it comes to Suni, it's more about, like, are you a horrific person?
Okay. Yeah, because she's staring into the windows of your soul.
Exactly.
To see it.
Yes.
And to judge you.
Benign in nature, she's not one to hold grudges and always forgives minor transgressions, and she delights in rewarding her followers with the joy of unexpected love and affection. Mm-hmm. Lady Firehair truly loves her followers, who in turn manifest and protect beauty in the world.
Okay, cool. It's not about what you look like, it's about what your soul looks like.
Although, like, her clergy do tend to be beautiful people. So
there's a little bit of a double standard.
Okay. Going on. She's mostly a dope person, but no one's perfect.
She's just a corporate douchebag, just like all the rest of them. It's like we're trying to sell a brand.
That's exactly it. She's the goddess of beauty in all its forms, not just pleasing sights, but also enchanting sounds, luxurious tastes and scents, and the exquisite pleasures of the flesh, from a lover's caress to the brush of silk on the skin. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, beauty is not skin deep in the eyes of Suni and her followers. It issues from the core of one's being and shows one's true face to the world, whether fair or foul.
Nailed it.
Mm-hmm. It should also be noted that Suni is the goddess of all forms of love and not just romantic love. In some ways, she is a kindness and compassion deity as well, both encouraging her followers to act with love in their hearts on a daily basis and living by this tenet herself.
I'm the goddess of scout units. Help that old lady across the street. Get that badge.
Uh-huh. All right. She has been noted to selflessly rescue others and thwart evil on many occasions, which has garnered her both many allies and many enemies.
Okay, but it sounds like those are the people you have the allies and enemies you want.
Exactly. Yes, okay. Absolutely. Aside from those who despise love and beauty as a manifestation of weakness, the Church of Suni is widely loved throughout Faerun and has many adherents to its teachings. The Sunnite faith is a particularly popular one in large metropolitan areas and among the aristocracy. Those of a literary or artistic bend, as well as people falling in love or looking for life mates, also often venerate Lady Firehair.
Okay, so there are many poems written from bards across the land.
She's about definitely Lady a goddess Firehair. Of bards and artists and stuff.
Goddess of bards. Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, as most Sunnites are seen as flighty, vain, and superficial, but also basically harmless, the Church of Suni has less influence than its prominence might otherwise suggest. So it's interesting. Like, she is a very powerful goddess in her, mm-hmm. and a power in her own right. And her clergy is very prolific. But because of its reputation, doesn't have as much, like, standing or respect necessarily. Not that it's disrespect, it's just like...
Love is fickle and love is fleeting, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
And that's how the followers be.
Exactly.
They're not showing up to fucking game night. They're the reason you're rescheduling.
Exactly.
Get them out of here.
Damn Sunites.
You're so beautiful, Sunites, but you won't fucking show up to roleplay. Please.
Please. The followers of Suni have the negative reputation of being hedonistic and decadent, and so they are to a degree. But her worshippers seek out these pleasures in life not out of mere decadence, but because the experience of pleasure is the touch of Suni herself, and is thus considered a divine experience.
Yikes, that's a sense.
It's a slippery slope, but like...
sounds like
I understand the concept, but it seems like a way too slippery slope.
Yeah.
More than that, her priests are compelled to foster beauty in the world, and they do so by creating art, by acting as patrons for promising talents, and by investing into merchants who bring luxuries from far-off places that have never seen satin or tasted a luscious wine. The idea here is that they are a privileged and indulgent bunch, but they are not selfish or self-serving. They want to make the world a better, kinder, more comfortable, and beautiful place for everyone they meet.
Okay.
So
lots of pillows.
Lots of pillows.
Soft
lots of
places
silk,
to rest.
Lots of fine foods and
cheeses.
Grapes.
Grapes. Procured meat.
Nice mahogany.
Mahogany. A cedar block for scent. I'm with it.
Yeah, no, see, that's
cool. Flower petals. I picture them as gardeners.
Yeah, potpourri.
A lot of gardening going on.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
The experience has to start the moment you walk through the threshold of, like, whatever property line you're about to go on.
Yeah,
so
sure.
If you're going to a Church of Suni, you're going to get hit with that jasmine, that scent. Mm-hmm. They're going to be burning incense. They're going to have candles going with essential oils.
But, like, also, like... a group of Sunnite, like, clergy or priests or paladins or whatever, might venture out to a provincial town that's maybe, like, down on its luck and doesn't have a great economy with the goal of, like, let's beautify this place. And how do we do that? Well, we need to create, you know, get rid of corruption. We need to create better, like, what's like, projects for the city. We need to bring in more economy and stuff. So it's, like, on one hand, like, maybe their motives are seem kind of shallow, but like their methods are actually really great. So
I like how this subtext there's a few read between the lines things going on here.
Yeah.
But one thing that was up front that I like was we are not down for evil. So if you want a cleric, a Sunite cleric, that Warhammer is probably being swung in the name of love.
Yeah, exactly. And even then, I would imagine a lot of Sunite clerics are the pacifist type.
Okay, yeah. So when like
so a, no weapon.
When a Dryder rolls up on you, it's okay. Oh, so no,
like all stick buffs, to the spell, all buffs, all support.
I was going
to
say it's probably still cool to slay evil, but
it's not so much that
it's cool to watch others slay evil while you help them with your words and magic.
Sometimes you have to, and that's they understand that, but like they're not out there trying to go smite. But there is an order of paladins which we'll get into later.
I see here on your record an act of violence. Well, that dragon was going to kill me and eat me.
Yeah, that's so fair. That's fair.
I stabbed it.
So as worshippers of the goddess of love, the followers of Suni are believers in romance, true love winning over all, and following one's heart to one's true destination. Mm-hmm. Faded matches, impossible loves, and ugly ducklings becoming swans are all in the purview of Suni. Her priests consider loveliness to be one of their greatest callings, and all are trained in comportment, fashion, and cosmetics. Indeed, so talented are Suni's priests in the creation of beautiful appearances that many take pride in their ability to present themselves as stunningly attractive as possible.
This is cool. This is like a advantage on disguise kit and stuff that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing makeup. Yeah. Hell yeah.
It'd be cool to be like a cleric of Suni that went more with like a trickery type domain where it's like you're using your beauty and your stuff to infiltrate corrupt like political entities.
And, right, like, yeah. And,
like, undo that.
Or like, survive the Hunger Games.
Or that, yeah, sure.
PETA. PETA comes up a lot these days.
I don't know why. When did this happen?
He could use his cake skills to hide himself in the mud whatever and live.
PETA was a Sunite.
I'm just here live. PETA's like a bakery Sunite.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I make delicious cakes and disguise and myself beautiful. For survival.
Exactly. It's art.
All right. It's beauty. It's love.
Suni's dogma is thus. Number one, beauty is more than skin deep. Number two, believe in romance as true love will win over all. Number three, follow your heart to your true destination. Number four, love none more than yourself except for Suni, and love yourself and lose yourself in love of Lady Firehair. Number five, perform a loving act each day and seek to awaken love in others. Respond to love at least once a day.
Whoa.
Six, encourage beauty wherever you find it. Seven, acquire beautiful items of all sorts and encourage, sponsor, and protect those who create them. And finally, keep yourself as comely as possible and attractively displayed as situations warrant.
Man, I know these are cool, but what about the sex?
I mean, that's part of it. That's part. Like, it's alluded to. That's part of it, but that's not like that's not the, no, I know. The end goal.
When I was talking about undertones earlier, I was like, I'll save that one for right before the short rest.
Let's go to short rest.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga, a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're back. We're back to love.
Temple of love that is the Dungeon Cast.
Some old short rest energy all through this episode.
That is so true.
We love you guys. If you love us, tell us, because we're not shy.
Yeah. We love to hear about your love.
We love to hear about your love, especially on this episode. Yes. If you comment...
The episode of love.
If you comment that you love us below, we'll respond with an I love you too.
There's that nice love icon that you can click on every comment.
We'll hit the heart. I will write that. I love you.
All right, that's fine. All right. As one would expect, Soon Nights are rife with celebrations and holidays. With Greengrass and Midsummer Night serving as the two most prominent Soon Night holy days, celebrated with a great deal of outdoor frolicking, with night-long flirtatious chases through forests and parks.
Hell yeah.
Individual
that
temples.
That shit I'm about. Fucking roleplay it right now, baby.
Individual temples celebrate numerous local holidays as well. At least once a month, the Church of Suni holds a grand revel, a large party with dancing, poetry, recitation, and heart-rendingly beautiful or soulfully rousing music, to which outsiders are invited with the intent to attract converts. And I'm sure it works really well.
Yeah. It's like, you want this all the time, don't you? I can see
it in
your
eyes. Isn't this awesome? Yeah. Another temple-specific celebration held by Sunite clergy is called a Feast of Love. It is a more intimate, quiet affair, open only to the faithful, who lie on couches and indulge in liqueurs, appetizers, and sweet pastries with lone dancers while lone dancers perform.
Wow.
These dances are interspersed with readings of romantic verse, prose, and songs of love sung by skilled minstrels. Such rituals tend to break up into private gatherings, though bards are always on hand to relate tales of courtly love or mysteries of Faerun for those who do not like socializing more privately.
I did buy the D&D cookbook, and it's based on a hero's feast. I did not see the Feast of Love in there yet. I'm still reading it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
It sounds like the hero's feast adjacent.
It does. It really does.
A feast of Love, specifically for things involving love.
Indeed.
So you're not eating a lot of carbs. You're not eating a lot of,
they did list a lot of carbs. It makes me wonder how they stay so beautiful.
Oh, wait,
because
yeah,
there's a lot
of
carbs.
There's a lot of carbs. Well, they're doing a lot of cardio.
Fuck yeah, they are. Sunni's clerics pray in the morning after a refreshing scented bath and do so by standing in a pool or bath and looking into a mirror lit only by natural light or candles. Sunni sends guidance to them by visions visible in the mirror, often by alternating or altering the reflection of the worshiper in some way.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
The Sunnite Church's organization is both loose and informal, and its leadership changes regularly with the whims of its clergy. The most attractive and charismatic Sunnite clergy are usually the high clerics. Little is thought of a cleric dropping everything and going bounding off to the wilds, though, particularly if the goal is some beautiful object or some beautiful individual, and such behavior creates little scandal in the church, but also many power vacuums.
Yeah, literally.
which they then fill.
Follow your heart.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then, like, someone else is going to follow their heart because they've been wanting that job. And they put that thing out in the forest for you to go find. Yeah, and now true. It's their time to shine.
Oh my gosh. The politics of the Sunnite temples.
It's really easy, but also complicated.
Yeah, so to say.
All right.
Sunnite temples are either stunningly beautiful edifices of fantastic design or classically elegant structures strategically enhanced by sculptured landscaping, constructed with numerous picturesque paths and promenades and surprising and enchanting nooks in which to share moments of love, beauty, and passion.
Excellent.
Temples dedicated to Sunni are most common in human lands, and they frequently serve as public baths or places of relaxation. So they also have, like, a pragmatic use to the community.
Okay.
A temple usually features a mirrored and well-lit salon where folks can spruce themselves up as well as see others and be seen. Where a temple doesn't exist or in a large city where the nearest temple might be too far to walk to, a small shrine to Sunni often stands near a street corner. These sites consist of a mirror hung beneath a small roof where one can say a prayer while checking one's appearance. The spot might feature a shelf or cupboard holding various perfumes and cosmetics so that those without the funds to purchase such items can still make themselves feel beautiful.
That's cool. This is like the anti-demon lord god.
It's super the anti-demon. That's exactly what I was thinking this whole time. Like, this is like the opposite of every demon lord I've ever heard of.
Love. Smells good.
Yeah, smells good. It smells so good.
Smells good is basically all
wants
you need.
To smell good.
Wants you to smell good. Wants everything to smell good. That is the opposite of a demon lord. Mm-hmm. Man.
Yep.
They make D&D smell bad. Something's got to tip the scale back.
It's true, and that's what Sunni's here for. So we've talked about the church's dogma and practices, but not much about their place in the adventuring and dungeoneering side of the world of D&D. Sunni has orders of clerics and paladins on the more adventuring side of things as well. First and foremost among those is the order known as the Heart Warders.
Okay.
So Heart Warders are specialty priests devoted to the goddess Sunni. Heart Warders follow the teachings of Lady Firehair by encouraging love and enjoyment in all things in life. They are considered the high priests of Sunni. Heart Warders often serve wealthy patrons in the great cities found throughout the realms. They in turn are aided in their efforts to help bring together men and women seeking love and intimacy, as well as to bring pure pleasure through art, music, and other enjoyable pursuits.
These are the little Cupids. Are they wearing diapers and shooting bow and arrow as well?
No,
okay. Wearing Hermes sandals.
They're usually wearing, like, kind of dope robes or even, like, a little bit of chain armor because they go out and fight, too.
I just can't not picture them as sort of cherubic, you know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, little I don't blame cheeks. You. I do not blame you, not one bit.
Little baby face heart warmers.
Oh, gosh. They often work as matchmakers, etiquette instructors, artists, or teachers in a myriad of creative disciplines such as visual arts, dance, performance art, vocal and instrumental music, personal beautification, and social etiquette. They are also the most likely to work as active adventurers seeking beauty and art lost in the world and bringing it back to be shared with all.
Also most likely to be part of, like, an essential oil pyramid scheme is what it sounds like to me.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. So, though pacifists at heart, sometimes heart warders are forced to take a less peaceful route and directly oppose all forms of cruelty and tyranny. Although heart warders do not relish battle, they can accept that sometimes the passion associated with beauty and joy cannot be preserved by any other means. When combat arises, they typically choose to shield others from harm rather than go on the offensive. Because of Sunni's love of joy and distaste for violence, many of the abilities learned and used by heart warders avoid any form of direct harm, and instead focus on charming opponents or healing allies. In some cases, this can lead to their opponents feeling remorse and subsequent reluctance in engaging them in battle, and a violent encounter can be stopped even before it's begun, which seems rare depending on who you're fighting, but maybe that works.
Yeah. So this particular paragraph of your notes spoke to me as you were reading it.
Yeah.
Let me hit you with this.
Okay.
Armstrong from Full Metal Alchemist.
Is a heart warder?
Like, the beauty, like, he's like,
yes,
he's like beauty definitely. Sculpting himself
oh, yeah,
to
absolutely.
Be. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent.
Very much so. Yeah. Armstrong is a heart warder for sure. heart warders have a few abilities unique to their holy order. They can magically inspire confidence in their friends and allies, granting them a boost to their innate charisma and magnetism. Through divine grace, Heart Warder's tears can be magically changed into the waters of Evergold. Evergold is a sacred crystal fountain and its surrounding pool found in the middle of the crystal palace of the elven goddess of beauty, Hanalei Selenil, within the realm of Arvander on Arborea, evidence that Suni and her are one and the same.
Holy sh! What the fuck? Kind of... That was a lot of data.
Yeah, it was a lot of data I dropped right there. So the tears can be turned into waters of Evergold, water that is holy to Suni Knights. This solution is deadly to opponents that suffer from a vulnerability to holy water. With more experience, Heart Warders can also use their tears to make a love potion valued highly by the faithful.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a weird power, bro.
Yeah. A big flex, yeah. Though.
Some Heart Warders can charge their kiss with rapturous power.
Whoa.
Bringing sensations of complete pleasure to any they bestow it upon.
Oh, my God.
The kiss blesses those it touches, granting them increased resistance against magical effects for a short duration. A Heart Warder's kiss is so potent that it can even confuse and daze the recipient.
Jeez, man. We're really earning that explicit tag on this one, aren't we?
It's just a kiss, bro.
I've been playing a lot of Breath of the Wild, and this sounds like great fairy.
Stuff. It super does. Your clothes. Absolutely.
I'm mostly picturing the big sloppy kiss. She's like,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's all my clothes are all wet.
The church also has a small affiliated knightly order of fighters, paladins, and bards who serve to guard temples and holy sites along with the clergy, and who sometimes pursue quests or do good works in Suni's name to promote her faith. This knightly order is called the Sisters and Brothers of the Ruby Rose.
Oh, cool.
To become one of the Sisters and Brothers of the Ruby Rose, a candidate must stand vigil in a church of Suni for an entire night. If the Lady Firehair appears to the candidate in a vision during the night or somehow shows her favor, the candidate is admitted into the order. Members in this order are given to writing essays and songs of courtly love when not engaged in a vital business, and often adopt a beautiful individual to adore from afar, whether that individual would be flattered by such attentions or not. So a little creepy, but I guess it is supposed to reflect a Guinevere Lancelot thing, just
okay, yeah,
without the betrayal, cheating, and tragedy bit.
Sure, that would be nice.
But like the admiring from afar, that courtly love, I think it's supposed to represent that.
This is kind of funny also. It's like, yeah. Go stand out there, and like if you see her, let us know. And
yeah.
It's just like, oh, yeah. I stood out here all fucking night.
Like, really feel those feelings.
Ring this little bell.
Yeah, that.
And then
yeah.
We'll let you in and you can do these essays, dog. Because the power vacuum is real. Go out there and have a vision for us tonight, okay?
Please.
We really need somebody to secretary up.
Please do. So where does Suni live? This is an excellent question. I do not know the answer to.
What, not like the celestial plane or whatever?
So she has been all over the place, and the Forgotten Realms chronology is not fun to navigate when you have... when you haven't read any of the novels.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is probably something that does exist in like the novel verse.
And then on top...
Let us know in the comments below.
Right. On top of that, the Forgotten Realms wiki itself is written in constant past tense, which I understand why, because it's a constantly changing chronology. So everything has to be in past tense.
Right.
And all of the 5e source books try and ignore that 4th edition ever even happened whenever possible.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone in the audience does know, but all I can do is tell you where she has reportedly lived before and after the spell plague. But where she is now, I'm not exactly sure. So
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fair enough. It hits you with some locations
that
you can keep or discard.
Yeah. So originally, Suni dwelled in the celestial plane of Brightwater, located in Arvander, one of the three layers of the chaotic good upper plane of Arborea. Brightwater was a fully urban realm in which recklessness, luck, and impulsiveness rule the day. Mm. This is notable considering that the rest of Arvander is considered a place of endless forests and open wild spaces. So it's like this weird kind of beautiful city in the middle of all this wildness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still, Brightwater had all the natural beauty of Arvander, albeit less wild and more gentrified, with stately mansions, summer homes, winter retreats, beach cabins, cottages in the woods, and happy houses, great and small. However, this plane was not well known for its quiet solitude, but rather for rollicking adventure, industrious business dealings, thematic parties, thrilling romance, games of chance, roving bands of revelers, and joyous celebration. So this was like... like Vegas, but not. I'm not sure.
I pictured like rolling hills, kind of like in one of the you described basically SoCal, where everything, all these places are an hour away or whatever. But I pictured like rolling hills, and you're walking with your lover or what have you, since this is the theme we're going with.
Sure.
And you know, on the tops of these hills are, you know, estates and such,
right,
where they're throwing parties and you can kind of hear like the echoes of
like
people.
That. I like this imagery. Yeah, absolutely.
So you could be walking down like a cobbled street and like kind of hear, you know, the raucousness of this place, or like see couples here and there like strewn throughout, or like people drinking out in the street maybe, or things like that.
Yeah, I like that. So besides Suni, Joaquin, goddess of wealth, Sharis, the demigoddess of hedonism, Timora, the goddess of luck, and Lyra, goddess of joy, also dwelled in Brightwater. So did Hanalil Selanil. God, I tongue twister. But as we have established, they are probably the same person. So,
right.
No shit, she lived there. Only Devas, Planetars, Solars, and other angels that serve the goddesses were native to Brightwater, and the rest of the inhabitants were either petitioners or visitors looking for a good time. Petitioners, celebrants, gamblers, lovers, and tycoons were allowed to travel freely here, but had to exercise caution on this plane because too much revelry could have possibly fatal consequences here.
Mm.
When a wandering band of merrymakers come close enough to a visitor, their enthusiasm can be so intoxicating that mortals find it hard to resist joining the party themselves.
And then all of a sudden they're just doing too many drugs.
Yeah. If they were to succumb to these, they would be swept away in the throng and have the time of their lives refusing to leave voluntarily. But the food and drink in any of the outer planes doesn't really give sustenance, and they would eventually collapse from malnutrition and die.
Oh, dang. So they're just like eating for the flavor, like the pleasure of eating. But you don't get full? Is that the sort of thing that happens?
You're getting nothing. It's just spiritual food.
You're eating the spirit, so your spirit feels good.
Your spirit feels great.
It's like,
but you have a body if you're there, if you're immortal, if you're not dead.
Right.
You know, so like.
This sounds like when I binge eat Oreos, except I don't have the caloric deficit.
Yeah, you know? Kind of. I suppose so. It's more related than it should be.
Okay.
Okay. So I've been talking about all this in past tense because in 4E, the spell plague happened and Brightwater was said to have been destroyed. So
The spell plague. I see.
Yeah. So only a small portion of Brightwater survived the spell plague, and Saloon, goddess of the moon, invited Suni and her exarchs to join her in the Gates of the Moon, a lair in the chaotic good, chaotic neutral plane of Ysgard. This version of Brightwater is a singular romantic city. Now, I don't know if this is still the setups for Suni, because 5E did a lot of work to reset the realms to pre-4E stuff, so like, we pretend like the spell plague kind of didn't happen.
Right, okay.
I couldn't find any fiber sources clarifying on the subject of Suni. There just really hasn't been anything written. Or if there was, I missed it. I couldn't find it.
So okay.
I'm not just... Maybe someone knows. I'm sure someone could tell us.
Do you think Saloon, goddess of the moon, always like introduces herself with her full title?
Goddess of the moon.
I am Saloon.
Well, Saloon's another goddess who's like five goddesses. Like, she's Saloon, but she's also Sahanin Moonbow.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she's like two people.
I remember that. That was some elf shit, right? Yeah, what's up with the elf lore? All being like, no, we have special names for our gods. But they're the same fucking
gods.
It's
because they were originally, like when they were made, like everyone had their own pantheon.
Right.
But then people thought, well, that's kind of weird. What if like we just like fuse all these gods?
I worship who I want.
Yeah, basically.
became a god of all peoples.
Not in 5e, but in 2nd and 3rd edition, Suni has been statted out, and it's, of course, it's ridiculous. She's a greater goddess.
Yeah, okay.
So she has been statted out as a level 20 sorcerer, level 10 bard, level 10 cleric, on top of already being an inherently powerful celestial outsider. So, like, as a celestial outsider, her base stats are, like, a challenge rating 20-something creature.
Right.
And then she has all these class levels on top of it.
Yeah, and just not even to mention, like, there's three different types of magic that are really pulling... You know, that spell list has got to be intense.
Yeah, that's like raw arcana.
The weave.
The music.
Holy radiance.
And also divine.
Yeah.
So we're looking at 800 HP, 84 AC.
Let me call it with my 10 levels of bard. Yeah. I will call upon the echoes of creation.
Plus 70 to hit with ranged spells.
Fuck.
Ability scores of a strength of 24. So she buff. Dexterity 28, Constitution 25, Intelligence 24, Wisdom of 35, and Charisma of 50.
Yeah, man.
She has 50 charisma.
Yeah, I mean, like, sorcerer, bard, right? Yeah. Like, you're gonna...
She's got so many spell slots. I didn't count them all. I wrote a million. It's not actually a million, but so many spell slots. And a host of inherent magical abilities. I would love to fight her one day. Hopefully they come up with some 5e stats.
That'd be fun. Why stat these things? Like a player, why make anybody deal with a plus 70 to hit, right?
Because you got to
Jaeger these things. You got to get inside these gods and drive them like cars and kill bad guys.
I will say, you got to remember that the plus 70 hit, this is for previous editions where, that's for third edition, I think, specifically. So the numbers are bigger there.
Yeah, okay.
I think the numbers, by the time you get to level 20, like, the numbers are like three times as big as what they would be in 5e.
Well, let's cut it in half. Let's call it 35 for 5e. What are we doing? Well,
I would go as far as to say cut it into a third, and it's still what, like, that's a plus 26 or something, plus 24.
Yeah, you roll
23.
You roll a 5, it's like no contest.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it should be. But still.
But if you look at that, like, okay, like, so her AC is 84, and her hit is plus 70, so she's fighting another god that's in that same realm. Like, she would have to roll a 14 to hit herself.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, when you're scaling it like that makes sense.
Right, exactly. So, any questions about Suni?
No, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, Suni's great. I had a lot of fun with this.
They really, I don't know if this is you going out of your way or if it's just kind of the way this character is written, but they really go out of their way to, like, not directly mention sexual stuff.
Because she's not the goddess of sex.
No,
she's
but that's the definitely... love. Involved in this.
Sure, absolutely. But there's, like, the goddess of hedonism. That's where you go if you want, like, a whole episode about sex, which I'm not going
to
do.
We're not doing that. So, that's what I wanted to talk about at the end of the episode here is, like, when you sit down with this at your table, it's not the goddess of hedonism. It's the goddess of love. But, like, that kind of stuff's going to be involved. So this is going to be uncomfortable for a lot of, I mean, we're in, like, a male-dominated hobby, I feel like, right? Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it should be different.
Like, not that the hobby's unfortunate, just that it's...
No. Yeah. I'm just talking about the stigma that surrounds this game.
Absolutely. Like, yes.
A lot of players are going to have trouble with this, I feel like, just based off of... Mm-hmm. Do we have any tips for, like, let's say you're at a table with... I guess I should say, know your players.
Sure.
And this isn't for everybody's table, clearly.
I mean, maybe or maybe not. Like, I find it so odd that we have to have this conversation. She's a goddess of love. Love should be something that we should just be able to talk about, and it's okay. Like, it shouldn't make anyone uncomfortable or be weird. And Suni's awesome, and I would love to be a cleric of Suni.
I think if you're going to use this, you need to approach it with that sort of confidence. Definitely.
There we go.
Yeah. Do it and own it.
Love it.
If you need to have a conversation with your players beforehand, hey, I'm going to do this, you know. Make sure everybody is comfortable with that sort of thing.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Sure.
Like, probably don't flirt with your party members.
You want to
draw. I would imagine that a Suni priest or priestess is totally about consent in every way, shape, and form.
They're not interested
in flirting with anyone who doesn't want their attentions.
I would hope so.
Yes.
That's the thing is, like, one of the more difficult parts of Dungeons & Dragons with your friends is, like, role-playing romance. And, like, how to do that appropriately.
The way that I handle romance in D&D is literally the player needs to be like, hey, I want this character to experience a romance.
Yeah, okay.
And so, like, maybe we should introduce them to this kind of character or this kind of character or, you know, surprise me, but, like, you know, it's a conversation you got to have, and so it's got to be pre-planned, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
To a certain extent.
I really like the way Patrick Rothfuss kind of handles the romance in Name of the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
That seems good. It's really sincere.
Yes.
And it's really well thought out, especially with like a lot of the wordplay between the romantic characters and stuff like that. But even the side characters that are not Kvothe or whoever have really good romantic relationships. Especially in the second book. Yeah. And
part of that is just because Kvothe himself is such a lover. Like, he loves love.
That's part Kvothe of it,
Kvothe is like
right?
a Suni priest, basically.
Yeah, like, he's got a lot of that inside of him.
And he wants everything to be beautiful and perfect. And
poetic.
So that's how he describes everything.
Yes. The visuals. And that's a good way to bring beauty to your table is to describe everything vividly. Yes. And
if I were to run, like, a Sunite, it would be a bard. I wouldn't do a cleric. I would be like, this is a bard, but they're a priest of Suni.
Sure, yeah, in name, not in casting.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's totally a cool way to do. You don't have to be a cleric to be a chosen one of God or whatever.
Not at all.
Those are some really great ideas. Like, purvey. You don't have to do the details a lot of the time, which is another thing I was going to touch on is you don't have to dive deep into like a physical romantic scene, unless that's what you're doing at your table. Yes. That's all fine. Yeah. But I feel like, especially the tables that I've sat at, that's not something that we're trying to particularly do.
No.
I feel like it would be fun to do romance one day.
Yeah.
But in this way, where, and then you walk off and blah, 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 and we're not going to talk about that part. It's the next day. Boom.
Yeah. Let's go. I mean, like, you guys had a wonderful night together, and like, that's your adventure, not the adventure.
That's very good. Some advice to give to maybe people in real life, too. Right, your adventure.
Well, I think we can get ready for our long rest.
Yeah.
And let's do that.
Let's do it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest, where we are building our beholder. It's Year of the Beholder, and we are building a beholder episode by episode, piece by piece, feature by feature, eye stock by eye stock, bim by bim. Let's do it. Well, what do we got? We got Suni on the list today.
We do.
All about beauty.
Yeah.
I think you should go first. Okay. You're going to take the I-beam power.
Yes, I'm doing
this time. I'll take the feature.
Okay. Sounds good.
My feature is conceptualized very lightly, and I want to talk it out. So let's get the ability out of the way.
All right. So the beam we're going for is a beautification beam, which looks like a stream of magical hearts.
Yes!
Cascade upon the target and beautify them and put them in their most beautiful state that they could possibly exist in, but also give them advantage on all charisma checks and saves and all that other stuff. So it's more of a beam for the beholder's benefactors, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. Now check this out. We're going to do something with beauty in the eye of the beholder.
Okay. All right.
So.
Oh my God.
Let's go with a really long eyelashes.
There we go. I like that. Just the most luscious lashes.
I don't know if you are aware of like what a trend, especially the day we're recording this episode in time right now, what a huge trend it is to put big old fakey eyelashes on for, particularly for girls at my work. They just put in fake. They have an appointment. Go get the fake eyelashes. They're huge.
Mm-hmm.
They're
like really, really huge.
Robust eyelashes. Oh, yeah,
like comically big.
We're getting there.
Okay, because I mean, I've dated some girls that did fake lashes, but it looked great.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not saying it looks like it. Like this beholder, we're going to have it cartoonish and exaggerated.
Yeah, I'm thinking the longest lashes.
I mean, it's automatically comic literally because it's
foot long lashes.
It has to be right.
Minimum. Absolutely.
So yeah, it's going to look
like, when this beholder blinks, there's like a slight puff of wind.
A Volkswagen Beetle. Sometimes they put those eyelashes.
Yes, just like that.
Yeah, it's like those.
All right, luscious lashes and a beautification ray. I love it.
Yeah, and the beholder has to make a monthly appointment to get them retouched.
Okay, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we'll go ahead and add that to the list. If you like this show,
beholder is an amalgamation.
It's getting there for sure. It does something positive, which
was unexpected.
Make you beautiful.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. It will probably affect your soul and not your
outside.
It
probably makes you look like whatever your idyllic idea of beauty is.
Okay, yeah. And definitely clean. It's going to clean you.
Unless, like, you really are into looking dirty. I don't know.
You love looking like you like looking greasy. Yeah.
Sure.
That's fine.
Yeah. Whatever floats your boat.
We're about love here on the Dungeon Cast, especially on this episode. If you love us and what we do here, there are a few ways you can support us. And the first and foremost is to tell people about the show. Help spread the word. Get that dungeon love out there.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing you can do is go to our Patreon, patreon.com/thedungeoncast, and support us monetarily on kind of like a monthly thing. That's super duper helpful. We're able to like make moves and do stuff that we got to do because of you guys on Patreon. And we like to make really cool bonus content to flood the Patreon with extra stuff for you guys to watch. If you like the Dungeon Cast or Super Quest Saga or any like live play kind of thing we do, if you like where our imaginations are at, you can go delve into all the crazy things we do on Patreon, live games, the dungeon chats, I don't even know what to call the dungeon chats. It's not on a regular schedule, but it's more than once a month now.
It's like a banter / behind the scenes podcast that we do, like
Shoot the Shit podcast.
Almost once a month.
Yeah, because we record once every 3 weeks. We try to get one in unless we're doing like an extra project.
Which we've done quite a few.
We've done a couple extra projects lately, but it's still going to be, you know, it's on there. That's at $5 a month, and you get some live game stuff too.
It's just an extra podcast.
The first season of FBATS, I forgot, was in that
another
tier.
Another extra podcast.
Yeah, another extra. There's a whole fucking, there's several shows. If you like this show, you can go get several shows. We release on Patreon as much as we can. It's not like a regular thing.
Yeah, we're at our limit. Just know that we're constantly trying to put new stuff.
Yeah, but there's exclusive merch on there. As early as the $10 tier, you can get a cool sticker, which we should update the art for the Year of the Beholder stuff. I gotta remember to do that.
Yes.
And then at $20 a month, you can get our new mug.
The Indeed
stylized
mug.
Indeed.
Yeah, Indeed mug.
Indeed mug.
With a nice TDCI.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty cool stuff on there. And we're working on more things that we can do in the Patreon. But like we said, we kind of like to push ourselves to the limit here, scheduling wise. We do what we can. Check us out on social media. You know, Twitter, Instagram. There's a link below for our Discord. And anything else that we missed that you want to touch on, Will? Do we have a new contest?
Oh, God, we do. I just don't know what it is yet. Let's figure that out before we record the next episode.
Okay. We have a new contest. You'll probably see it on social media.
No, let's figure it out right now.
We're going to figure out the contest right now. I'm going to tell you the rules for the contest right now, and then Will will tell you the prize when I'm done telling you the rules. Yeah. The rules for the contest are going to be tweet a link of a video or episode of our podcast or our Patreon or anything that's associated with us with hashtag DungeonCast. And you will be entered to win.
Candlekeep Mysteries. This is going to be an adventure anthology coming out, I believe, in March.
Yes.
It's for levels 1 through 16. And I think it's, anthology of 17 mystery-themed adventures for the world's greatest role-playing game.
And what I've been reading is that it's wheelchair accessible, which I think is really cool.
For sure. Ooh, that alt cover looks fucking gorgeous.
I know.
Yeah, so you're going to win the alt cover because it looks amazing.
Yeah, that's what we like to do here is give you... We like sick, awesome, sick-ass, good-ass art here on the Dungeon Cast. And D&D definitely does it well. The regular covers are cool, but the alt covers are definitely standout. It's pretty apparent.
So this comes out on March 16th, so that's when we're going to announce our winner. So between now and March 16th, do what Brian said about Instagram.
Twitter. I didn't even say Instagram. Said Twitter? Oh. I'm not in charge of Instagram anymore.
No, you're not. You should still tell them how to do the contest.
Are we going to keep the same rules?
It's up to you, man.
It's not. It's not up to me.
Well,
I relinquish that power.
The person who is in charge isn't here for us to ask, so you got to make something up now.
Okay.
And then we'll coordinate with her later.
We'll just do... This will be the... I don't know if this is still a good way to run our contest on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a specialist come in and work that out. But for this one, let's just do what we've been doing, which is go ahead and hit the like. Make sure you're following the Instagram account, The Dungeon Cast. Mm-hmm. Hit the like on the post associated with the contest. Mm-hmm. And then tag somebody in a comment below and let them know, to check us out.
Indeed.
It's pretty much a thing. So the way it should work is you should be allowed to comment as many times in separate comments as you want, tagging a different person, and that will count as an entry.
Indeed.
The whole idea about our contest is to help with some exposure and to give back. So, it's basically tell people about the Dungeon Cast, and, you know, there's something in it for you, something physical. Not just having your friends be in on this dope podcast that we all love. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all we got. That was a really fun episode, Will. Thanks for all the love doctoring that you did.
No problem. And I think we can call it a game.
Let's call it a game.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
Bye.
The Dungeon Cast.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.